Hello, believers, and thank you for tuning in to the 3E's Lifestyle Ministries, empowering the journey, encouraging your faith, and embracing life along the way. This episode, I speak with Angel Rich, tech venturist, innovator, author, Black woman in tech curator, and tech mentor in my head. In this episode, I took a behind-the-scenes approach to get to know the young pioneer they call the next Steve Jobs. Angel is the creator of the app Credit Stacker, co-founder of The Wealth Factory, and much more. She encourages us all to bet on ourselves. Her confidence is infectious. This real deal combo with the real deal Hill is going to take you to the next level. Let's listen in. Today's guest is an amazing guest. I'm so happy to be talking to her today. I met her 2 years ago at the MBE conference here in Syracuse, New York, Minority Business Enterprise Conference here in Syracuse, New York. And she's made a huge impression on me being a fellow Black woman in tech. And she has more than an app. I like to say it's more than an app. And her journey has started from that, but it's moved on to so many other great ventures in her life. And I can't wait for her to share it with you guys. I think we'll all walk away from this inspired and filled with information and resources to help us and lead us into our next journey. And her name is Miss Angel Rich. Hi, Angel.
Hey, good morning. How are you today?
I'm doing fantastic. Happy to be here. Happy to be alive, you know, and finishing God's work, doing God's work. That's all I can do. And how about yourself?
Pretty much the same, you know. I made sure I prayed this morning and I'm sitting there going through my emails. So it's been a pretty good day so far. I'm having a pretty good week, actually.
That's good. If you can, tell them, introduce yourself to my listeners.
Yes. So I'm Commissioner Angel Rich. I am Vice Chair of Financial Literacy for DC, as well as founder and CEO of The Wealth Factory, where we design financial literacy education technology games. I'm also the founder of Black Tech Matters, an organization, as well as a PAC that focuses on increasing tech equity for employment, education, and entrepreneurship. And then I'm also the author of History of the Black Dollar, Black Women Politics, and The Wealthy Life Financial Literacy Textbook.
Wow, what a roster of accomplishments and things, ventures that you're doing right now. So this all started for you, if I'm not mistaken, actually not with Credit Stacker. You worked for Prudential, and this is how this all unfolded, correct?
Yes, yep, I started at Prudential.
Okay, so at Prudential, I read in the Undefeated, which is back in 2017, because I found this very interesting, right? That, you know, you've contributed, your work and your efforts with that company, you've brought in a little over $6 billion for them, right? And
yeah,
you won a competition, like all these great things, and they offered you a bonus and to pay for your education. And you were like, no. I'm out of here doing my own thing. So can you tell us a little bit about that? I wanted to dig into that part because I find that very interesting. And I always think about Steve Harvey when he says, you got to jump and like leap. And I was like, oh, that's what she did.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. Years later, my best friend, she makes these observations about me and kind of keeps them to herself. Uh-huh. And years later, she was like, yeah, girl, you just jumped out the window and invented the parachute on the way down.
Right.
And I was like, oh, that's how you really felt about it.
Yeah. And that's what I'm thinking. I'm like, oh, okay. I can envision that actually. Like, he was like, yeah, I'm out of here. So, you know, what was it that made you say, like, what happened in that space? Because I think a lot of us, like even myself, coming from working in corporate America, because I'm a hybridpreneur right now, right? And I'm working in corporate America. And like, what was that to say, you know what, you know, this is the moment. What made you feel like this is the moment that I'm just going to just shoot out and do it on my own?
You know, nobody has really kind of actually quite asked me this question like this. So I look forward to actually breaking this down and answering it.
Good.
It was a couple of things. One, I had just did the African American. First of all, it was, let me break it all the way down.
Okay.
First of all, I came into the company making money. When I won the Prudential case competition, I sold my Generation Y plan to Prudential. My team was the first people to come up with selling financial services to millennials and Generation Y. So I was in Forbes magazine when I was 22 for that.
Right.
So that's just like off the break, okay? So off the break, I had already started making the money coming into the company. So that was strike one. Then strike two was I did the African American Financial Experience Study. And when I did this study, without going into a lot of details, there were actually some older Black people that was trying to get promoted off of the study, that off of my work, basically. And so, the Caucasians couldn't really jump in that battle, and I'm fighting against my own kind. And
Right.
so that became interesting. So that was like strike number two, as well as I probably made them, they told me that that plan would make like $1 billion a year. So, they made at least a billion, when I left off of just the African American study. So that's strike number two. So then you get to my last year where I make them the 6 billion, and I asked them for 175,000 for my church after I had just did the African American study, and we were going on a mission trip to Africa, and I wanted to sponsor the trip for my church. I felt like I had earned it, and I was going to turn it into a marketing campaign and put everyone in Prudential t-shirts. So not only would it be a great goodwill towards me and my church, but it would have also been an amazing marketing campaign for Prudential.
Right.
And they told me no. And so I'm just like, hold up. And then so those are like the negatives, right? So then let's look on the positive side. On the positive side, they were like, oh, you could possibly be the first Black CEO of Prudential. And then because I was a researcher, I was privy to like a lot of secret information. And they really did have me on this CEO track. Like I was able to see this like back-end document thing that I'm not gonna talk a lot about. But basically, I really was on the CEO track. And I was like, and I just like my life flashed before my eyes. Like, do I really want to spend? Because the last CEO was like the youngest CEO, John Strangfield, who I love a lot, but it took him 30 years to get there, right? And so I was like, do I want to spend the next 30 years of my life making this company billions of dollars every year just to have them give me a few peanuts and, kind of send me on my way, and then I have to do it all over again? And I think one of my best mentors, one of my favorite mentors, he basically said to me, he was like, oh, you made us 6 billion this year. And I was like, yeah, I think I should be VP. I was trying to get a triple promotion. And I said, yeah, I think I should be VP. Like, tell me who else made $6 billion this year. Please point me to them. So he was like, yeah, I agree, but I think you should do it again next year, and then we'll consider it. Like, hold up, what? So you want me to make you 12 billion? You want me to make you 6 billion 2 years in a row, not to mention the billion I made you last year, and then you'll think about making me VP? I was like, nah, I think I'm gonna go start my own company. Like right then and there in that conversation, I was like, I think I'll be leaving soon, and I'm gonna go start my own company. And he was like, tell me that idea, Angel. I want to make sure you're not off your rocker. And so I told it to him. He offered me a $500,000 for them to buy it. I was like, no. I was like, I can make this company more successful than you can. And he agreed with me. And then I left. And he was like, it's not going to be soon, is it? I was like, it's going to be in the next 3 months. And then I left.
Wow. And finding that courage, though, to just leave, like, which it sounds like you did, is amazing. Does that come from, right? Does that come from you, your upbringing, you think?
My mother and father never wanted me to go to college or work for corporate America. I was raised my whole life to be an entrepreneur.
Mm-hmm.
And my parents are entrepreneurs.
Mm-hmm.
So it was almost like a joke, or, you know, I don't know if you've seen my TED Talk. I was being a Trojan horse. Mm-hmm. I was simply there to learn how to run a Fortune 100 life insurance company. That mm-hmm. was my goal since I was a child, because my parents always wanted to own a life insurance company. So I intend to own a life insurance company one day. That is my, that is what I'm reaching for. That's
right.
That's what my North Star is. And so once I got to the point where I could run the company, where, you know, they're putting me on the CEO track, I'm giving the CEO advice. I had done multiple things that aren't even public. I was helping to predict the stock market on a quarterly basis, and the company was aligning goals and visions around my predictions. And then I found out they, sometimes they weren't even like double checking my numbers because they trusted me that much.
Mm-hmm.
And I could have like tanked the American economy if I was wrong because of how large the company was.
Mm-hmm.
So when I realized that I had that much power,
mm-hmm.
it was like, why am I sitting here? I love Prudential. Yesterday I was doing a podcast and I was saying we. And they were like, why do you keep saying we? And I was like, oh, I'm sorry. I'm so used to being at Prudential. like, talking like that. But I love the company. Like, don't get me wrong. You know, the company overall is a great company. I just outgrew it.
Right.
And I just had more potential to offer it.
Right.
Then there, you know.
Okay, so let me, before I move forward, let me come back a little bit. So you leave, okay, because there's a second part to this story that's even more inspirational for me, right? And I'm sure our listeners and those who, you know, follow you and kind of like you're their mentor from a distance and in their head. So like, let's move into fundraising, because that's another part where I know for myself, I'm struggling. When I say struggle, I'm struggling like making all the right moves. I'm a part of the Tech Garden, and plus, you know, we'll talk offline about, you've been here to Syracuse, so we can talk a little bit more about sort of like, you know, we're behind but we're ahead type thing, and where some of my struggles come from. But in the frame of fundraising, you mentioned how, you know, there were people, there was, I don't know who your competitor was at that particular time, but they were able to raise, you know, millions of dollars, more than you were. You raised like around 200,000, and I think they raised, what was it?
180 million 100. At that time. I don't know how much they didn't raise now. I don't even keep track of it.
Right, right. You don't even need to. But in that moment,
yeah.
Let's talk about that, this disparities. But not only,
I actually forgot Black about that.
Tech, but also being a Black woman in tech, and, you know, crossing your T's, dotting your I's, having everything is a check mark, is at 100, you know, you're the best, you know, you've been awarded for being the best, you've been told you're the best, but yet still there's this struggle of raising the capital that you need to accomplish your vision, right? How was that for you? What was that experience for you? Do you think it contributes to the service work that you're doing now, right, through your financial literacy empire? That's what I'm calling it. And what advice do you have for those of us who are in that space, in that situation now? I know it's loaded.
Yeah, you know, I came up with a new word last night called perception validity.
Mm-hmm.
And it's basically meaning validating somebody's perception. It doesn't necessarily have to be reality.
Mm-hmm.
It can just be their perception. So when an investor views you, you tend to come across with a certain perception. And they usually are basing their perception off of their own self-reference criterion, meaning the things that they grew up with that they deem normal and have become accustomed to. Say, for instance, everyone in their family eats nothing but vanilla and chocolate ice cream. If somebody was to eat rainbow sherbet, they would think that they were weird. But that is their self-reference criterion because they didn't grow up with people eating rainbow sherbet ice cream. Mm-hmm. So it then becomes a situation where, in this perception validity, that you have two roads that you're almost forced to walk as a Black entrepreneur. Do you give in to this perception validity where even though you prefer rainbow sherbet, you eat vanilla and chocolate?
Mm-hmm.
Or you bring somebody along with you that prefers vanilla and chocolate, and they just explain, hey, my buddy's a little weird, he eats rainbow, but I know we should eat vanilla and chocolate. Or do you just be yourself and you don't care? You're going to eat your rainbow sherbet.
That's right.
And I personally chose to go the rainbow sherbet route. And I did that because I felt like there had been 400 years of people eating chocolate and vanilla. Mm-hmm. And I didn't see where that was getting us. I didn't see, still recently, just had the whole George Floyd Black Lives Matter, you know, thing. And I've been screaming about this for years, mm-hmm. for years, about the various different disparities. It's not a new fad for me that I'm just hopping. In fact, I actually, if people follow me, I actually got pretty quiet during George Floyd because I don't, my voice isn't needed in those moments. Mm-hmm. My voice is needed in rooms that are quiet.
Yes.
You know? But when everybody else is screaming, there's no need for me to add to the screams necessarily just to be screaming. That's not who I am. I'm bringing light to where there is dark,
mm-hmm.
you know? And so when I got named the next Steve Jobs, I could have just ate vanilla all day, acted like I didn't even know what a rainbow sherbet was, mm-hmm. and rode off into the sunset. But I didn't, I had girls, and you know, I wear braids. I'm from DC. DC women are known for their braids. And subconsciously, I was putting out this message about braids, and I'm also light-skinned. And you typically don't really see, at least not before, you know, some may say I started a trend. But you typically, for the most part, didn't see light-skinned women with braids, mm-hmm. like I was wearing them. And, you know, it would be more of a prim and proper type of AKA look going on. And I had this light-skinned girl come up to me crying, bawling tears, and was like, I have never seen a woman like you before. I've never seen a light-skinned woman wearing braids, and you're on the stage, and you're intelligent, and you're doing technology. And she was like, I just want you to know how much you have personally given me life and inspired me. And it was a very real, I wish I knew what that girl name was. It was at the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. If she out there listening. And it was from that literal moment forward of that girl crying to me, I decided to go on this mission, and that it wasn't about me. It wasn't about me making money. It wasn't about the company just scaling, that I had an opportunity to do something so much right. bigger, leveraging myself. For it.
Right. I feel like that's where the parallel between your mission and mine with Civic. So it's, if you can just only imagine replacing what you're doing with financial literacy and implement civic education, right? Empower and knowledge, political participation in those spaces. That's been my journey since 2016. And it started because of Alton Sterling and Philando Castile, right? Castile. And mm-hmm. you had all these celebrities and national leaders or celebrity activists, as I call them, you know, no shade, but that's what, you know, we have some of those. And they were like, call your lawmaker. And I had known from being an organizer that most people don't know who their lawmakers are, let alone how to reach them, right? So it started from that, but then moving off of my passion and understanding that people needed more, especially in our communities across this country, but let's start from home where I am from, which is Mount Vernon and Yonkers. I just absolutely kind, and then the work I was doing in Syracuse, because I was living in Syracuse at the time when this started, which brought me here as an organizer, by the way, just for some background. I knew it needed to be more because there's so many ways to empower our community, right? It's not just one way. We're talking about the whole package in the whole body of working not against, but within and shifting and changing the culture of American citizenship, basically. You know, it's like I'm like infatuated with civics, and I just know that that's one of the key things we need in addition to understanding wealth is understanding our system, how it operates, and operating within it.
So Courtney Keene is the co-founder of The Wealth Factory. Mm-hmm. She's been the co-founder since day one, every step of the journey. She currently manages $1.4 billion for the U.S. Navy. She's a contract specialist. She's very keen on accounting. So she doesn't miss a beat when it comes to any money. And she also happens to be my best friend. So we have a good amount of history and mental wealth conversations with each other. Mm-hmm. And we're really very well balanced.
Okay, so that, because that was going to be my next question. And finding a partner, because that's hard, right? How do you find someone with something so great and so big to join your vision and your mission? But it sounds like by you guys being friends, that wouldn't be your, that's like a rare part, a rare way of establishing a partnership, I guess. Versus, you know, having to go and find someone else that either balances you out and match you out, but you know, have to establish and build a relationship with them at the same time.
Yeah, and you know, it's crazy because I had to really humble myself, because at the time, her and I were in the middle of a little bit of a tiff. She was still my best friend, but we were in the middle of a tiff, and we hadn't spoken in a little moment. And when it came time for me to choose my co-founder, I couldn't accept anybody else but her. Mm-hmm. So I gave her a, hey, girl, hey. And she responded. She said, I said, hey, you want to be the co-founder of my company with this? And she wrote back, yes, you know. And so we've been off to the races ever since.
Oh, my God. I love it. She's like, yeah, me and my cousin, my cousin is my sister, cousin, friend. She's my person. We were just talking about this yesterday, too. Would you say she's your person?
Oh, for sure. You know, again, how many people would let you jump out a window and trust you to invent the parachute on the way down?
Right.
Like Courtney would probably literally jump out a window with me and trust me to invent a parachute on the way down.
Right.
Like, that's how much faith she has in me, but it's not blind faith. She has been my best friend since freshman year of college. She used to think that I was full of it when we were in college. And then by the end of that freshman year, she was like, you are one of the most amazing people I've ever met. Like, so now when we meet people, she's like, yes, I know Angel can seem a little unbelievable. However,
right.
It's actually real. And in fact, not only is she, her favorite line is, not only is she not exaggerating, she's not even telling you everything.
right. Oh my God, I love it. This made me smile so much because it's like right along the lines of my podcast is going to just be so dope. of all like the new stuff that I'm trying to bring into this for my audience. This is just amazing. I didn't want to miss though for my listeners, because I know they're probably like, Lakia, you just went in a big circle. Let her answer the question about fundraising. So I want to go back to that really quickly. So, you know, again, the disparities in fundraising specifically to that. What advice do you have, though, for those of us or for other people who, regardless whether it's in tech or, well, maybe that's another question, too. Is it different raising money for tech versus a different type of, you know, business venture? But in your efforts of fundraising, what advice would you give us, especially as Black women, to like what avenues or spaces do you think we should be looking into to find money our work?
Yeah, you know, I definitely believe that raising money should mainly be for like technology and health companies.
Mm-hmm.
Things that basically will not make a profit in the near future that will take investment to make it happen.
You know, like Uber technically still has not made a profit. It's been operating off of investments.
Really?
So, yeah. So that's kind of what a tech company looks now. Not to say that they shouldn't be making a profit. That's a whole nother conversation. But basically, that's when you go out and raise venture capital and you raise money from angel investors and all those different type of things. They used to have a thing in New York Alley called "Are You Fundable?" And basically saying that you don't just go raise money because you have an idea. You know, I've given money to a guy before to start a t-shirt company, but I really think that there should be more. So let's use the t-shirt company example for instance. You know, I really think you should start hand to hand when it comes to a product. So I have a product that I just started called Angel Skin. And I didn't raise any money for it or anything like that until I actually got the product going, got all my inventory, got the website built. Pretty much I have everything. And then I know there's a market for it. And then I can say, okay, if some investors want to come in on this, you can come in. But I know that it works, as opposed to just saying, hey, I got this idea. I want to do this skin cream company, but I need $10,000 first. And you don't got not a single jar, not a single customer, you don't got no orders, no nothing. And so I think in this new age of fundraising, that's where a lot of people have started to get confused. Where if they think people are just supposed to just hand them money, and it does not work like that at all, at all, at all. And you know, another good way to start off that I highly recommend, if you're not just doing a lifestyle company and you're really trying to build a real company, is to go do business competitions and pitch competitions. The competitions will let you know where you stand real quick. So if you're not winning, then you might not be ready yet to go ask people for money. It's kind of just that simple. Whatever reason you're not winning for, that's what you need to go fix. You need to go fix whatever it is. And I'm not saying you, it's different levels to competitions. They have competitions that are just starting out that have no money involved whatsoever. So it doesn't have to be a matter of you winning money. You just need to win. You need to go to maybe a dolphin tank that doesn't even have a winner, but just see what the investors say about you. Or a DC Archangels where they write you a check, and you see if an investor is willing to write you a fake. They have these fake checks that they have to fill out. Like, okay, would they be willing to write you a fake check? You know, they do this. They do it in New York as well. I forgot the name of the program. Somewhere in New York Alley, they have a thing like that too. But they're all over. So there's different levels of different competition that you can enter to showcase your product, get feedback, and investors will start to ask you questions and start to tell you that they want to invest in you and start to have you set up meetings with them to pitch them. Is your pitch deck together? Are all basically are you together? You can't just go out there just randomly asking people for money.
But if you're not like in like a New York City or like you're saying like a DC or Atlanta or LA, but you live in these like big yet small pocketed spaces where things are happening, but it's only like in one place. There's not a, it's like monopolized communities, if that makes any sense, where you know it's small because everybody knows you know everyone else. And there are a few people doing what you're doing or something similar to what you're doing, but they think you're in competition. Joe Budden was talking about this. I saw a video of him talking about this, like with a conversation with Charlamagne. Well, not with Charlamagne, but about Charlamagne, and establishing the difference about ownership and you know when you think you're competing because things look the same and it's similar, but it's not because you don't know how it, you know, it's going to operate different. The goal is so big that you can't even wrap your head around it. And when you're that person and you're that beacon and you have one of those, when the decision makers are people that don't even see it, how do you, what do you suggest? What do you suggest for those who are like out of place, I guess you could say, for what they have? You know, like they really need to be somewhere else or go somewhere else to accomplish what they need to for their vision or their product or their venture, their tech venture. I'm going to speak on tech innovation, their tech venture. But you're so far ahead that the people that are in power or position in decision makers, they don't even, and even if they do see it, they see it that it's greater than what they already have. So they just reject you. Like, how do you deal with that, that rejection? Or how do you deal with, you know, the people that look just like you mentioned that earlier, how in the past, like at Prudential, it was like your own people that you can't, and you know, you mentioned ageism and all these things. How did you handle that? How did you deal with that?
Well, my nickname is the Ninja. And the reason for that is because I tend to get very stealth in moments like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I will disappear and reappear without you even noticing what happened.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so in moments like that, I tend to hunker down and I dive into, without fully exposing myself.
Yeah, because I'm going to call you after this. Because I need to,
I basically
have like a Zoom wine moment with you.
Later. I basically and I gotta be quick because I got a 12 o'clock. Okay. But basically I take a dual approach. I take an approach of upping me and I'm not gonna say diminishing them, but I'm gonna say enclosing them. So life is a chess game, right?
Mm-hmm.
So two things have to happen on the chessboard. One, the king and the queen need to stay alive. And two, all the other pieces on the chessboard need to go away. So that's kind of how I look at moments like that. I go into self-preservation. What does my army look like? Who are around me? What pawns are dispensable? How do I protect my kingdom? How do I protect what I have? How do I protect my intellectual property? How do I protect my future and my path and where I'm trying to go, no matter what the opposition looks like? Then, in the middle of me doing this, I have this opposition. How can I best attack them? What pawns can I use to attack them? Do I need to call in some knights? How deep does this go? You know, right. And basically arming up those forces of barrier to keep the opposition on their end, smothered on their end, and unable to touch my end, and reducing and minimizing their even existence.
Right, right. Savage. So, positive savage, though, because it's for the greater good.
No. I mean, you know, God had... you know, God had him walk around the seven walls of the walls of Jericho seven times.
Before
you know,
it fell down.
You gotta right? just kill him with silence sometimes. You
know, yeah, that's how we gotta go. Leading that to that, because I know you're getting ready to get off. We gotta close out. How have you used your faith through this whole process, right? Your relationship with God. And you mentioned how your friend, you know, so here's the alignment. You know, she stepped out on faith, which was blind faith. How have you used this relation, your relationship with God and the gifts that he has given you, both physically and spiritually, through this whole process?
Well, first of all, I know that God wouldn't put an idea or a dream in your heart that you couldn't achieve. So if I believe it, I know I can achieve it. And that's written in the word. Secondly, I know that all the time, I have to walk by faith and not by sight. Just because I can't see it doesn't mean that it's not happening or God isn't laying it out for me. I also have to listen when he tells me to wait or be humble or be patient or different things like that. I try to stay very focused on that and very attentive to those moments and to those messages. I also try to be a light to others and let people know, like, hey, it's okay to mix God with business. You know, mm-hmm. if God is who's leading you, that's just who's leading you.
Mm-hmm.
And don't be ashamed of it. And so I think the combination of it all, as well as when I'm dealing with a difficult situation,
where I need to apply some difficulties, I really do try to think of scenarios in the Bible that God has provided an example. Like when somebody crosses me, okay, how did Jesus handle that? You know, if somebody lied to me, if I need to reprimand somebody, what would Jesus do? And I really try to take that to heart because I want to be aligned with God at all times in my decision making.
Right. Wow, that's beautiful. Thank you so much for opening up and sharing that part of your life with us on your life's journey with Lakia Cahill or Cahill. Almost, I'm getting there with the name. we're going to close out. And before we do, three questions just to kind of personalize it a little more so it's not just businessy, about your favorites. So what's your favorite food?
Spaghetti.
What's your favorite movie?
Troy.
And what's your that's a good one. And what's your favorite song?
I'm Going Down by Rolls Royce.
Nice. And last but never least, a wonderful tip or life takeaway for our listeners that they can hold with them during their journey, or a word of encouragement.
Your imagination can take you anywhere.
Say that one more time.
Your imagination can take you anywhere.
Awesome. And with that said, thank you, Angel Rich, for your time and your energy and your intellectual property and your mind and your spirit and joining me on this new venture and journey with my podcast as well. And you have a wonderful day, and I hope to talk to you again soon.
All righty. Thank you.
And thank you guys for listening and tuning in to the podcast.